You're listening to the Vermont Edition podcast. This is Meg Malone, the Vermont Edition digital producer, just here to let you know that this episode has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Yesterday, the U.S. Senate passed its first spending bills related to the 2019 budget. They passed three bills, kind of a minibus instead of an omnibus. Alabama Republican Richard Shelby chairs the Appropriations Committee, which has been working on the language and substance of those bills. He spoke on the Senate floor yesterday.
We do have a framework for success. No poison pill riders. No new authorizations of law. No non-germane provisions. And I've said it many times before, and I will keep saying it. This is the basis of the agreement that I have with Vice Chairman Leahy. This is the approach that our subcommittee chairman and ranking members have adopted in producing strong and balanced bills.
Senator Leahy was also singing the praises of this collaborative approach in his address from the floor.
What we have here before us is the first test of that strategy. And I think both Republicans and Democrats would be pretty pleased with the result. We had a good debate on this package of bills, including last week 8 roll call votes. And we adopted a manager's package that contained 32 amendments on which we'd reach agreement.
The final tally on the three bills up for a vote in the Senate yesterday was 86-5. Senators Leahy and Shelby say this is an approach that they wish would be taken by the House as well. Today on Vermont Edition, Senator Patrick Leahy joins us to talk about working with the Republicans, but also some of the other big issues in Washington right now, including a ruling today from the Supreme Court that will allow President Trump's most recent iteration of the travel ban to move forward, how U.S. and foreign companies and foreign governments are reacting to Trump's trade tariffs, and what Congress is doing to address immigration issues. Senator Leahy, thanks very much for joining us today from Washington.
Thank you. It's a little bit quieter here in the studio than it was on the Senate floor yesterday. It's nice to be here.
Well, let me ask you about that, since we've played that tape of you and Senator Shelby, and it's clear that you are working hand in hand to make sure that things run smoothly in the Appropriations Committee, and you clearly have buy-in from your fellow committee members and the larger Senate body. But you passed 3 of the 12 money bills that need to move through in order to avoid a government shutdown in September. So are you likely to face a tougher fight on some of the other ones that are still to come?
No, we've passed several others in committee and just getting floor time, and we will pass them as we go forward. The big thing will be what happens with the House. The House is all over the place on where they're going to be, and so we don't know what's going to happen. But there are 12 bills. We passed 10 of them.
In committee.
And what happens, because we passed them by such overwhelming margins in committee, it is a pretty good indication of what will happen on the Senate floor when they come to a vote. Now, understand, it hasn't been this way for a number of years. And one of the reasons I took the vice chairmanship of the committee. It's one of only 3 committees that has a vice chairman. I took it because I knew that Senator Shelby and I could work together. We met with Senator Schumer and Senator McConnell, the 4 of us, and said, let's go back to the way the Senate's supposed to be. If we can't do that, I don't know why anybody would want to be in the Senate. But I think we can do it. We can say that the We took the Trump budget, which was more talking points than reality, would have hurt so many people, certainly would have hurt rural America, would have hurt children, would have hurt people who need help from the government, and we got rid of it, and we passed good consensus bills. That's the way it should be. I think the American public will be helped by it. Certainly Vermont is going to be helped by it.
Senator Shelby mentioned that there are no poison pills, and this is one of the key tenets of your approach here, is to make sure that there are not things that are just automatically not going to get the support of the Democrats or not get the support of the Republicans. Are there issues that could have been seen as poison pills that you and other Democrats may have wanted that you have taken out of those 10 bills that have passed in committee?
Well, I can think of a number of poison pills, but you get poison pills on the other side.
I figured.
I mean, you can have everything from abortion to immigration. But we do have, I think what we end up saying is, let's take these other issues and put them on the bills they're supposed to be on, whether it's a judiciary bill, banking bill, and so on. But don't put in amendments that are anti-women's health, they're anti-EPA, anti-NOAA, anti-science. And by getting rid of them, we also avoid the possibility of a government shutdown. I think the White House would love to see us do as we have in past years, have one great big bill at the end of the year, and then the president vetoes it, and we have a government shutdown, and then he gets what he wants. Here, we're passing individual bills.
So there are things that you and the Republicans have worked on to say, get this out of the spending bill. But are there things that you really wanted that you have also had to sacrifice on?
Well, there are
you and your fellow Democrats.
No, there are a lot of things I'd like, but I'm going to put them in the bills where they belong. For example, we're doing the farm bill today. I've got everything from organic farming to feeding programs, the farm to school, farm to family program that I wrote originally. We're making sure that's in there. Our feeding programs are in there. Certainly, dairy and a number of other things. Now, some would like to put those in appropriations. That's not where it belongs. We're going to put it in the farm bill, and I'm almost certain that the farm bill, with my amendments, are protecting Vermont, protecting our organic farmers, and protecting our children, will pass.
Senator Leahy, there's a lot of backpatting about how this has been working in appropriations and then through the whole Senate body to pass these bills. And as you said, this is how the Senate is supposed to work. This is how Congress is supposed to work. And I mean, the fact that this is sort of a moment for celebration or a moment to take note of how things are finally working and how people are getting along, first of all, shows that things have not been operating in a normal way for quite a while. But it could also be frustrating to constituents to see this sort of celebration and self-congratulation on something that is actually what you've been sent to Washington to do.
No, well, you may want to look at it that way. I don't look at it that way. What we were saying is here, we're encouraging people on both sides. It takes a lot of work. To get it done. I haven't called press conferences. I haven't done things a lot of people do when they say, here, look at this great thing I'm doing. I haven't done that. I've just tried to get the work done, and I've tried to get other senators to do it. And I'm also aware that I have to hold both Republicans and Democrats together. Otherwise, you're going to see our laws made by a tweet by Donald Trump, and it's going to be not American priorities. They're going to be Trump priorities. What I'm doing, I don't consider this self-congratulation. I'm not running for office. I have no agenda other than to represent Vermont as well as I can and represent the country and bring us back to where the Senate can be the conscience of the nation. That's what the Senate should be. Otherwise, why have 100 people representing 300 million Americans? Why would anybody even want to be in the Senate if you can't go back to being the conscience of the nation?
You mentioned that this work in the appropriations is aimed at getting these bills passed, avoiding the threat of a government shutdown. And, you know, it's a little bit ironic. Vermont has been in the rare position of facing a possibility of a state government shutdown in recent weeks. And this was, of course, if the legislature and Governor Phil Scott could not come to agreement on a budget. Most people probably know by now, but last night the governor said he would essentially acquiesce. He's long said he didn't want to sign a budget that raised property taxes. He was requesting the one-time use of some funds that had been unexpectedly infused into Vermont's coffers to essentially buy down both the residential and the non-residential property tax rates. He's not going to sign the budget, but he is going to let it pass into law without his signature, essentially avoiding a government shutdown on July 1st. I know that our Washington delegation typically stays very quiet on state government issues, but I'm curious if you can reveal if you've been in conversation with Phil Scott or lawmakers over the last week or so, because this is not something Vermont typically faces, and I'm curious what those conversations have been like.
No, I try not to tell the the Vermont legislature what to do in the vain hope that they'll return the compliment, and sometimes they do. But I'm a lifelong Vermonter. Marcel's a lifelong Vermonter. My sister Mary is a lifelong Vermonter. We obviously are affected by what the Vermont legislature or the governor does, and we watch that. I've worked with Governor Scott on issues where the federal government impacts Vermont, but I have with every single governor, whether they're a Democrat or a Republican. I have said that my door is open to whoever is governor and whoever is leading the legislature on issues where the federal government might affect Vermont.
So you have been talking, but there's nothing that you'll reveal about those conversations.
No, but, you know, I've been – in all the years I've been in the Senate, I have had an open-door policy to whoever is governor, whoever is the legislative leadership, whatever party they're from, on issues that involve the federal government, if I can be helpful.
We're talking with Senator Patrick Leahy today. We're talking about issues in Washington, issues that affect Vermont, what he's been up to, work on the Appropriations Committee and getting budget measures passed through the Senate. We'll see what happens with President Trump on those. Listeners, if you have questions about trade tariffs, if you have questions about immigration policy, we're going to talk about the Supreme Court decision. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. Again, that's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post your comments on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Let's go to Tiki, who's calling in from Burlington. Hi, Tiki. Go right ahead.
Hi there. I was calling because in the spring of this year, Vermont Digger did a piece exposing that the senator's office had essentially, according to the Boston Globe, fudged the numbers for the environmental analysis report on the basing of a 35 in Burlington. So I wanted to just see if I could hear the senator's reaction to that.
Well, let's see. There was a Vermont Digger report based on an anonymous source that they didn't want to disclose, so I have no idea what it is or what it is. But Senator Sanders, Congressman Welch, and I have supported the F-35 coming to the Vermont National Guard because, as the Secretary of the Air Force has said, a Republican appointee has said there will be no mission for the Vermont Air National Guard if it's not the F-35. Of course, they gave the F-35 to them because they're one of the best, if not the best, Air National Guard unit in the country. It wasn't from any pressure by Senator Sanders or Congressman Welch or myself that they're there. They earned it. They earned it. And I think that it's good that we have a Air National Guard in Vermont. I'd hate to see us without an Air National Guard. And if they not qualify for the F-35, we would not have an Air National Guard. It's as simple as that. It's not some pressure or anything else. There's no way I could talk the Trump administration into sending, nor could Senator Sanders, nor could Congressman Welch, to send the F-35 to Vermont if they hadn't earned it.
You know, I think one of the questions that detractors of the F-35 program have, one of the critiques or complaints or feelings is that And you side yourself with Senator Sanders and Representative Welch's this united front. And it seems like for people who say—
And Governor Scott.
And Governor Scott. But it often feels to people who don't want the F-35s like you're not even addressing the concerns that they feel about the detriment that this will bring to their communities. And it's this sort of not being willing to even address the question of how these communities who say, we don't support this, we don't want it, are feeling. And that feels like a disconnect compared to some of the other ways that you've always addressed Vermonters and their feelings.
Well, I also look at the, 12,000 or 14,000 signatures on petitions to bring the F-35 here. Even with those people who are all for it, I said this has to be determined neutrally. It's got to be done by whether the Air National Guard in Vermont is the most qualified for it, and they are. I've also urged the Air Force and others to do all the environmental studies to give every bit of information that they can to the communities, and they have.
But I know you get calls, I know you get emails, I know you get letters from people in Winooski and in South Burlington and Burlington who say, I'm not going to be able to live here, or I'm worried about my children, or I'm worried about my community. And I'm curious how you respond to them because, you know,
Yes, and I pass on these to the people who are doing the studies. I want them to make sure that they take this into consideration. I remember when I was a young student at St. Michael's College, born, raised in Montpelier, I had not heard jets taken off. And we got there, and I could not believe the roar of the jets they had for the Air Guard at that time, a lot louder than anything we have now or expect to have. And I understand that concern. But there is an airport there. It has cargo planes that take off that if you've been there, you know how extremely loud they are. They have a few minutes each day of their training when the Vermont Air Guard takes off, and they can be loud. That's what happens at airports. It is loud. In Washington, I'm on a flight path. When I'm here, I hear airplanes taking off an awful lot more than they do in Vermont. But I think that we have to make sure these people are heard. And I asked the Air Force actually to extend their comment period so the people of Winooski and the people of Burlington could make their thoughts known. And because I wanted to make sure every single person, whether for it or against it, could be heard. And I think General Cray and the rest of the Guard have continued to work with the community. I know sometimes views can change. I remember one thing right after 9/11. As you recall, the Vermont Air National Guard was tasked to fly cover over New York City because at that time we didn't know if there's going to be more attacks or not. They had to be there around the clock for over a month, so there were an awful lot of takeoffs and landing in Burlington. Somebody from South Burlington called my office and said they had sent me a letter just before 9/11 saying they were concerned about the noise of the Air National Guard taking off, but they hadn't received an answer. And the response was, of course, we've been a little bit busy because of what happened with 9/11. And I hadn't seen the letter yet. The person calling in said, oh, I'm thankful. Tear up the letter. I think the planes sound great. And, of course, the noise they were hearing during 9/11 was far worse than anything you'd have having the F-35 or the F-16 stationed in South Burlington. And I pray there will never be a need to have that kind of deployment. But I do know that the Vermont National Guard, when they've been deployed anywhere in the world, both the Air Guard and the Army Guard have a nothing but praise for their abilities, the fact that they are usually far better trained, far better, far greater ability than anybody else. And frankly, I worry, I don't mind if somebody has a legitimate concern about noise or health. What I am concerned about, some of the letters I get, when it's obvious they're against any military presence in Vermont.
We're talking today with Senator Patrick Leahy, talking there about the F-35s and questions over bringing those planes to Burlington. But we are going to get to other topics as well. We want to talk about trade tariffs. We have a question about North Korea. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're talking with Senator Patrick Leahy. We've been looking at some of the issues coming up in Washington, including his work on the Appropriations Committee to move through some budget bills to avoid a potential government shutdown and also to avoid a big omnibus spending bill of the kind that President Trump threatened to veto last fall. Other questions are up for debate as well. We're going to talk immigration. We're talking about tariffs. We can talk about the Supreme Court's decision on President Trump's travel ban. Claire is calling in from Addison. Hi, Claire. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. And thank you, Senator Leahy, for all you do for Vermont. My question is about prescription drug prices. And as you know, Senator, we passed a law in the state of Vermont that allows us to set up to be importers of a small group of very high-priced prescription drugs that we will determine looking at the data for the state of Vermont. We, some of your people, John Tracy from your office and people from Senator Leahy's and Congressman Welch's office came in and said, this looks like a good idea. We'll help however we can. So I wondered if you'd talk about what it will look like for our three people from Vermont to influence the feds, and in particular the Secretary of Health and Human Services, to get him to give us permission to go ahead and do that. That is the final bridge we have to cross before we can implement the program.
Senator Leahy, before you do that, I just want to clarify, Claire, this is Senator Claire Ayer, one of the sponsors of this Vermont bill, right?
It is.
Excellent. Okay, Senator Leahy, go ahead.
And I am sorry to see her retiring because she's one of the best senators of either party we've had in the legislature. So, Claire, I wish you well in the future, and I thank you very, very much for what you've done for Vermont.
Thank you very much, Senator.
All three of us, of course, will keep pressuring on the secretary to allow that. I think it makes a great deal of sense because the cost of prescription drugs have gone very high. I get so many calls from people in Vermont about the cost. It should not be a partisan issue. I don't think it is. In fact, earlier this month, a bill that I helped write, the CREATES Act, was passed with support from both Republicans and Democrats across the political spectrum in the Senate Judiciary. It would prevent brand name drugs from using the methods that they now have to artificially keep their prices high and prevent generics from entering the market. Now we want to get it onto the Senate floor, where I think it would be passed easily. It would save, well, among other things, it would save taxpayers almost $4 billion a year, but it would also save a huge amount more for consumers, for insurance companies and others. So I think the combination of the CREATES Act, and if we can get permission for Vermont to go for it and set an example to the country in the bill that Senator Ayers talked about, we'll be a lot better off. I'll keep pushing for that.
One of the big issues that has really occupied the minds of so many Americans and so many non-Americans as well over the last several weeks is the policy of separating families at the border for families who are coming across illegally. The new policy, the new interpretation by the president and Attorney General Jeff Sessions of zero tolerance has led to a couple thousand children being separated from their parents when these families crossed illegally. And this actually started last year. It's really ramped up this spring. President Trump, as you know, Senator Leahy, had been saying only Congress had the ability to change the law, that his hands were really tied. But he did reverse course. He signed this executive order ending the policy. And he's now instructed the military to quickly get camps ready where families could be detained within their family units. He's also seeking a judge's order that would allow children to be held for more than 20 days in federal incarceration. I know that you're against both of those policies. What are you doing to address this issue from a congressional perspective now?
Well, you know, let me just begin with what the president has said. He has changed his position so many times on this, and unfortunately has not been truthful in what he has said. I was, as a Vermonter, I was thrilled to see the demonstration on the State House lawn yesterday about the separation of children. If I hadn't had to be back to vote on the appropriations bills, I think I would have stayed in Montpelier to join that. But we have to have those all over the country. The three members of the Vermont delegation are totally opposed to this program of the president's, but we have got to get support around the country, and I wish every state would have a demonstration like we Vermonters do. I'm the original co-sponsor of the Keep Families Together Act that would prohibit the separation of families, the lead co-sponsor of the Dignity for Detained Immigrants Act. I've also been raising questions that they have so far been unable to answer of administration officials when they come before us. You know, we have to stand up. We have to speak up. And the fact that so many Americans have has made a difference. The president first was saying, well, his hands were tied because there was a law there that required him to do this. And he kept saying that even after it was pointed out by everybody, there is no such law. He was making that up. And finally, when the pressure of Americans speaking up and the press showing the pictures of what was happening, he finally admitted, well, no, there is no such law. And so now we'll allow them to be reunited. But now we got to go back to things. For example, a lot of these people are coming here seeking amnesty. During the Obama administration, what the president doesn't want to talk about, and it really is infuriating, during the Obama administration, we set up in the so-called triangle of countries that have the most people seeking amnesty. We set up provisions there where they could seek amnesty within their own country before American officials. And this cut down substantially the number of people coming across our borders. Because President Obama had set that up, President Trump immediately shut it down. And, of course, what everybody warned him would happen, happened. People started streaming across the border looking for amnesty.
But one of the problems here is that there is such a backlog of people who are seeking asylum that actually entering a legal port of entry and saying, I would like to seek asylum, I mean, they can't necessarily even get there. So,
But see, that's the point. They go back to putting the facilities that the Obama administration had. They don't have to come to the points of entry. They can seek this in their own country. And I think one of the huge mistakes made by the Trump administration was to close it. And when they did, it almost guaranteed you're going to have a flood of immigrants flooding our borders.
So what next then? I mean, I think everyone agrees, from the president to both parties in Congress, that our immigration system, if not broken, is seriously hobbled and in need of a lot of work, whether it's just hiring more lawyers, hiring more judges, certainly fixing visa issues and visa programs for workers. So how do we get a handle on this?
Well, actually, the president doesn't agree we should have more judges. He wants to, he has already stated that we should not allow the laws to apply. We should turn our backs on the law, even though both the president and I took an oath to uphold the laws and the Constitution of the United States. He has said he does not want to uphold the law or the Constitution. He's going to have to keep the same position for more than one day at a time to get this done.
But is there anything that would work? I mean, we know tomorrow the House is supposed to vote on a GOP-led immigration bill that would actually, among other things, create this legal pathway for the people known as the Dreamers, the young people who were brought to this country illegally and who had a legal status in this country under the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. But there are not necessarily even enough Republican votes on that bill, and certainly not enough Democratic votes. So what happens next as we try to figure out some way that Congress can at least come together on dealing with immigration issues so that some of these fights with the president are sort of taken care of by congressional action before they can be this fight?
Well, I would point back to in 2013, when I was chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, after months of work, we brought together two-thirds of the Senate, Republicans and Democrats alike, and passed a comprehensive immigration reform bill, from the most conservative to the most liberal. You had a few they were opposed to anything in immigration, like then-Senator Jeff Sessions. But we passed overwhelmingly. It would have, there were enough votes to pass it in the House. They refused to take it up because it would violate the Dennis Hastert rule. And they felt the Dennis Hastert rule was sacred, that they could only pass a bill if the majority of Republicans supported it, not if the majority of Americans supported it. And that meant both Republicans and Democrats voting for it. I would hope they would not make that same mistake again. You talk about them having a bill coming forward. The president last week was saying they must have a bill. And then a few days later, he said, no, don't have a bill. Let's keep this situation on the border and we'll use it for political fodder this fall. Well, I don't want to see a three-year-old child used for political fodder. I want to see America stand for America's values. And it can be done. I would urge, I mean, the Republicans control the House and the Senate. I would urge them to do what Senator Shelby and I did on the appropriations bill. Invite both Democrats and Republicans in and to have a voice. Right now they're saying only Republicans can have a voice on it. That's not the way you get legislation passed. And you'd mentioned that we seem pleased with what we did in appropriations. What we were trying to do was show an example. If something as complex as appropriations bills could be done with Republicans and Democrats working together, why can't we do it in immigration? Later today and tomorrow, we're going to do it on a five-year farm bill. It's going to be Republicans and Democrats coming together. There is no reason why we can't do the same on immigration.
So you're confident the farm bill will move through fairly quickly?
Yes, but what you don't see is the months of work that went into it. I don't know how many evenings I spent, how many even weekends I spent on working on this, but so have a whole lot of other people. And the tremendous men and women in my office who work on it have given up a lot of family time, vacation time, and everything else to work on it. There is a lot of things behind the scenes that go to that. But throughout it all, Senator Roberts and Senator Stabenow made it very clear they wanted Republicans and Democrats at the table. And we're getting it done. I'm hoping that the farm bill and the appropriations bill will show that it can be done. And that we do the same with immigration, we do the same with prices of drugs like the Leahy-Grassley Creates Act and others. Forget the tweets for a momentary political gain. Go to the things that do take a lot of work. They don't get in the press. They don't get covered. We don't hold press conferences. We just get the work done.
Are you confident that the House could take a similar approach, though? Because, you know, none of this works if there can't.
I'm confident the Senate can, and the House is going to have to look themselves in the mirror and say, are we willing to stand up for America and not stand up just for individual political dialogue?
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're getting Senator Patrick Leahy's take on some of the top news in Washington and the priorities that he's been working on. Senator Leahy, we got a note from Robin in Burlington who says, what's your position on Trump's outreach to Kim Jong-un at Singapore? I was concerned to read that you joined a group of Democrats that challenged the agreement between the two leaders. But is not a step towards peace a positive initiative in the world today? Why do you seem to support the continuation of the Cold War and U.S. military supremacy between the U.S. and Korea?
I'm not sure where that person gets the facts. In fact, I publicly commended President Trump for his willingness to enter direct negotiations with North Korea. I've always maintained we should open communication with all governments. I didn't think name-calling, especially to a nuclear power, was right. But I did not condemn. In fact, I commended. There's a difference in the words of the president going to enter direct negotiations with North Korea. What I did say, and everybody has said, including Republican commentators and Democratic commentators, that the document produced by the Trump-Kim summit contained little other than platitudes, and there's no new concessions on the part of North Korea. That's why I get concerned, and I would not praise Kim, a man who's had his own uncle executed, had his brother murdered, has tens of thousands of people who have died imprisoned through torture, rape, starvation. Don't hold him up as the model of what a leader should be. Should we meet with him? Fine. And I said I commended the president for that. But now let's see something realistic come out of it. Will the torture, the murder, the rape stop in his prisons? Will the starvation of his people stop? Will the murder of his own family members stop? That's going to be a showing of whether it was worthwhile or not.
Let's talk tariffs. The president has the power to impose restrictions on foreign imports that are determined to be a threat to national security. And that's the provision under which the president has levied these pretty steep tariffs on steel and aluminum imports. Democrats and many people in Congress have expressed dismay over these tariffs, including many Republicans. But we got a note from Tom who says, I believe it is morally reprehensible to fund our government on the backs of American labor instead of imported goods from foreign countries. Should the policy of our government be to tax all of the steps of production here in the USA, resulting in a large portion of the cost of the final product being taxes, regulation compliance, and wages to Americans, while at the same time let foreign competitors, who more often than not pay their workers far less than in America, often directly subsidized domestic industry to cut American products, to undercut American products, and whose environmental standards are substandard to our own, import products and dump them on the American market tax-free to compete with products made in the USA. So that's a little complicated, but Senator Leahy, you know, what do you think? How can Congress now either limit the powers of the president or address these tariffs, which are getting some pretty steep retaliatory tariffs in exchange from foreign governments?
The last time this country, and I think somebody has to look at history, the last time this country got involved in sort of massive terror wars, it triggered the Great Depression, and it took us a generation to get out of it. Caused irreparable damage to the United States, to a lot of the families of America. Nobody really wins tariff wars. And to say we'll slap tariffs on Canada, for example, a country most nations would give anything to have the long, unguarded border like we have. They're Vermont's biggest trade partner. I met with a number of companies in Vermont that tell me with the tariffs or the threats of tariffs, they're going to be out of business. It isn't the question of somebody being paid more or less in another country. It's that they won't be able to get the steel, the aluminum they need to create good paying jobs in Vermont. What we should be doing is fighting for jobs in America. We've seen what the tariffs have done. Harley-Davidson is moving some of their jobs overseas. Now, those are going to go to places where people are highly paid, but they're going to create Harley-Davidsons in other countries. What have we gained by this? I don't really see it. The president said that we have one of the major Chinese telecommunication companies, which we know has spied on the United States and has helped others spy on the United States. He has said we can't have tariffs against them because otherwise we're going to lose a whole lot of jobs in China. I'm more interested in jobs in America. I'm more interested in the security in America. Show me a country that has won out in the long run by imposing tariffs, especially tariffs by tweet. The tariffs the president has proposed would punish every single American family. We will all end up paying more, and we will see a lot of good jobs leave.
Today, the Supreme Court ruled to uphold the latest version of President Trump's travel ban. And, you know, this is sort of overruling a lower court decision that said the ban was unconstitutional. This has been going back and forth in the courts. One interpretation of the Supreme Court ruling is that the court feels like its hands are a little bit tied because it can't know the president's thinking and whether or not this is based on racial or religious animus. And so it has to look at whether or not it's legal and found that it is. I know that you disagree strongly with the travel ban, but do you what do you think about the court's interpretation here?
Well, it was a very, very narrow decision, and I disagree with it. I strongly disagree with it. From its very inception, remember when it was candidate Trump and his campaign, he said, we got to keep people out who are Muslims and keep people out of Muslim countries. Now, every one of Mr. Trump's own national security officials, when they've come before committees I'm on, they've told me under oath that the ban's entire premise that citizenship is a reliable indicator of a terrorism threat, that that's false. I would hate to think that when my grandparents emigrated from Italy to Vermont, that they would have been stopped because of their religion. Or when my great-grandparents emigrated from Ireland to Vermont, that they would have been stopped because of their religion. There should not be a religious test in America. That is anti-American. It's not a question of protecting us. It's anti-American. We should be spending our time, our efforts, our intelligence community and others going after real threats, not pretend threats based on an anti-religious test.
We just have a minute left, but I want to read you a note we got from Dave, who wants to know, does the senator support California Congresswoman Maxine Waters' calls for public protests in public spaces against members of the Trump administration? Dave writes, I saw her quoted as saying, quote, if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd and you push back on them and you tell them they're not welcome anymore anywhere. Dave asks, should that even be legal? It seems like a form of harassment.
I don't support her call. I think of Martin Luther King, who, even though he faced some of the most blatant anti-racial threats, terror, and everything else, took a position, we will stand up for our values and we will show dignity. That's the Vermont way. Every week when Marcel and I are home, we'll have people come up to us in the grocery store, coming out of church, on Sundays or just walking down the street, and they'll express their views either for or against something I've done. But we do it in a civil fashion. That, I think, is a lot more effective.
Well, Senator Patrick Leahy, I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us and talk to constituents today. We will continue to see what happens in Washington over the next few weeks. Things are moving very quickly. Thanks for your time today.
It'll be interesting. Thank you, Jane.